Are you stuck in a job, not a career? Wish you could get paid for doing what you love to do? Your Success Network is an online community that combines the strategies of the best-selling book, Secrets of the Young and Successful, with the proven science of online assessment. YSN connects over 1 billion young people in the workforce with opportunities to build a career with lasting happiness. Visit YSN.com, Your Success Network. Realize your potential. Your future starts here. YSN.com.
Well, you know, it's been 18 months since I've caught up with our friend Jen Cashel from Your Success Network. Jen, welcome to the show.
Zara, it's so wonderful to talk to you again.
Exactly. You should say, be saying, so where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, right? or maybe it's, you know, or where is Waldo or whatever. So my friend, I think one of our last segments we did, indeed it's been 18 months, you had just jumped back and forth to Brazil to make some new connections, but also I knew the hidden agenda, which was to make sure you got all those segments. So you kept your executive status on American Airlines. But Well, let me really briefly introduce that Jen, of course. She has led a movement inspiring young people to pursue their professional dreams for more than a decade. Her online Your Success Network, along with her best-selling books, speeches, and dissemination of invaluable data on the younger generation's values and beliefs, bridge gaps between those interested and those offering opportunities. In fact, her book, The Secrets of the Young and Successful. She graduated from Boston University in 1996. Oh boy, I was a Freudian, wasn't it?
Wow.
With a BS in International Studies. She's a very young lady, my dumb folks. And she started her first business at 13 and then has subsequently grown and developed opportunities to connect jobs to careers to aspirations. So again, Jen, I know you've, in particularly here recently, been a lot in the developing world. So tell us what's cooking.
Yeah, I've been, I do a lot of speaking around the world, and that's one of my favorite things to do because I just love being up close and personal with young people with great ideas who are just trying to get to the next level or build businesses. So when I'm not speaking to big companies about that demographic, I'm going to, you know, youth conferences and things. So I got invited by someone in Peru who had read my book in Spanish a couple years ago, not Secrets, but the last one, The Young Entrepreneur's Edge, and it apparently totally changed his life. And he was on a path to get an engineering degree and said, wait a minute, I really want to be an entrepreneur, and I want to start setting business. And he took a major shift in his direction, and now he's 21 years old, leading massive conferences with hundreds of people. He's working with the Minister of Industry and Tourism and huge companies, and he actually brought me over to Peru to speak, and he said it was his dream and it was my dream to go to Peru, so it was a perfect win-win. And I got to, instead of doing one speaking engagement, I did five, and then we met with a bunch of the ministers of the new government, and then they also threw me on television, on Spanish television, for 15 minutes, which was scary. My Spanish is not exactly where it should be for that. So we did that, and then I got home, and I got this incredible invitation by the U.S. State Department to go on a diplomatic mission to North Africa. And this was mind-blowing to me because I've been doing this work with young people for 20 years now. Not as long as the 60s, but 20 years.
You caught me, yeah.
Yeah, I am. but so I got to go on this this mission to Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco to help basically create these entrepreneurial ecosystems in those new emerging markets to help them become entrepreneurial and create jobs and really strengthen our relationship with that the new Muslim world.
So tell me some of the striking questions you got asked. You know, not so much the speeches, but let's talk maybe about some of those one-on-one conversations. And what did you feel and hear by the nature of the questions or the dialogue that played out?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think a lot of the kids there have lived under very tight government rule for a long time, and often, you know, very tight secular rule, and they weren't allowed to speak freely. So you could see that they had a lot more questions than we were really getting, but most of what they wanted to know was, how do I get this to the next level? These kids are, and I say kids, but, you know, most of who we met with were in their 20s. They were very, very intelligent, very well-educated. They, in most cases, had a really good sensibility of what they needed to do to compete in the global economy with their new technologies and their innovations, but they had no idea how to do it. And, you know, they wanted to know a lot about failure, too. without asking that directly, because failure is looked at as a very strong negative in the Muslim world. Mm-hmm. If you fail once, no one will ever do business with you again. Whereas here in the States, investors won't even take a shot on you if you haven't failed, because
right.
they know that you haven't learned.
Right, you haven't learned, or you haven't really stretched or gone over that edge, and that accelerates your learning. So it's a very different market there.
Exactly. So we had to explain to them that as entrepreneurs, you have to try things. You have to make mistakes. You have to put yourself out there and fight for the ideas and the business, you know, concepts that you have, despite anything that anyone says. And, you know, oftentimes you will fail, and that's going to be good for you in the long run. It's horrible when it's happening, but you have to just push through, and we've all experienced it. So, they look at us in America, and they recognize that we have an incredibly free, wonderful environment to be able to pursue pretty much anything that we want to do. We don't have to ask government permission to start a business. We don't have to give away 40% of everything we make instantly. We have freedoms that they've never had. They've dreamed of them, but now they're starting to have them, and they want to know firsthand how to, you know, what to do, how to get to the next level.
Now, Jen, with your working with entrepreneurs and young entrepreneurs for so many years, do you find the types of businesses that these young people in these parts of the world, are they similar to the suite that you might have seen 15 years ago working with young entrepreneurs?
Well, actually, you know what? I would say they're very similar to what I see today in different parts of the world. They're very in tune with what's out there. When we were in Morocco, for example, you'd see more handicraft businesses, more, they have very rich environmental resources. So you'd see a lot of businesses that took advantage of those. Whereas when you went to Algeria, this is Algeria or Tunisia. I mean, Tunisia has tourism, but Algeria has been very heavy oil production, and there's been very little, you know, small business community. So they're being trained heavily in technology, and even like Microsoft has a business center, you know, business innovation center in Tunisia. So these kids, when they're studying engineering and they're studying technology, they're coming up with a lot of new business ventures in that field, and their eye is on Silicon Valley.
In terms of a learning environment for them, or an opportunity to replicate that in their country?
Well, you know, Silicon Valley represents the mecca of technology startups that explode and become huge global, you know, plays. So when they see what happens in Silicon, they see in a really unique environment where entrepreneurs who are very intelligent, who have very sophisticated ideas, can go and get support from the best people in the world to take an idea and skyrocket into a global brand. And that's what's happened with so many of the biggest companies that we all use every day. Mm-hmm. You know, the Apple computers, the eBays of the world, the PayPals. So they're very savvy about that, but they just, you know, from an operational standpoint, they need a lot of work. But that's, you know, why we were there. It was all in the spirit of doing public-private partnerships to basically help them and their government understand what kind of infrastructure needs to be in place to support these entrepreneurs and create a pipeline for them to get where they want to go, as far as that may be.
So what were some of those infrastructure conversations then that would be had from those of you after you interacted with them?
Well, one thing that was really interesting was access to capital.
Yeah, sure.
One of the venture capitalists who came from Silicon, Craig Hansen, who was just brilliant, he actually got up and did a fabulous presentation to the Minister of Finance in Tunisia and all of his, you know, friends and colleagues about venture capital and how it works in the United States and how a system like that could be implemented in a country like Tunisia. And also angel networks, for example. They don't really have angel networks, and people who don't know that.
Yeah, okay. Why don't you explain an angel network to our listeners who may not be familiar with that is?
Yeah, just to explain, angel networks is really, let me back up for 1 second. There are a couple different ways entrepreneurs get financed. They can get financed on the tiniest level from friends and family or from microfinance programs if they're in a third world nation, all the way up to a little bit more sophisticated investors. An angel investor is typically a high net worth individual who will put chunks of money into a business and watch it grow. They are fairly sophisticated. And sometimes they'll put money in 5, 10, 20 different businesses. When they get to that kind of level, they start to get involved in angel networks, which basically will bring together 5, 10, 50 high net worth angels who will look at different business concepts. They will mentor, you know, entrepreneurs, and then they'll put in chunks of money, which could be $50,000, $100,000, $200,000. When you get to the venture capital stage, you're getting to a much more sophisticated level of investor. They are very intensively involved in your business, and they only take a tiny percentage of the businesses that come to them, maybe 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000. But those are the businesses that they put the best resources out there into getting to some sort of exit or liquidity event.
Sure, and not in the case of all these, of course, this isn't just about writing the check. It's about access to knowledge, and that what I would imagine the youth in Tunisia or in any of these countries you talk about, or even here in the States, to get to rub shoulders with people who've already had the bumps and bruises as well as the shining stars from having been successful in what they do.
Of course, and that's a huge part of it. So it's intelligent capital. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about venture capital, you're talking about very intelligent money that's coming into your business. Whereas, you know, when you're with an angel, you know, you might just have a very sophisticated accountant who, or not even, just a regular accountant who is, you know, has been in business for a long time and wants to give back, or wants, you know, is inspired by your business idea. So it just, you know, that whole system basically creates what we call an entrepreneurial ecosystem. Those are all the different levels, basically, of financing that are available to an entrepreneur. And it's important that that's available in any society, because some people will start little mom-and-pop businesses, and that's important. But others are going to have high-growth, high potential ventures. And those are actually the ones that we all need to be investing in, because they're the ones who create the jobs.
You bet, exactly. You know, Jim, we've talked about not just the conventional entrepreneur from the standpoint of a for-profit business, but also this whole movement internationally around social entrepreneurs that are doing things to do well, not just do good, right? And so my question would be, in these developing countries, and just on your experience of knowing the landscape at other places, do you see more of a preponderance of social entrepreneur things? Because that is what many of their countries need at this point in time.
You know, you do see it. I didn't see it as much with the technology ventures,
okay. But
I did see it with more of the handicraft businesses. Like, there's a certain oil, like argan oil, which comes from Morocco. And when you hear the people talk about creating manufacturing programs to take the argan oil and manufacture it in a more sophisticated mm-hmm. way than the women, you know, who sit there for 12 hours a day and crack open the nuts and, you know, squeeze the product out.
Sure, right.
You'd see them talk about how they could funnel money into these communities and help these women make sure that they could support their families. And it's fascinating to see that when you have a very strong labor class that works in the fields or in the jungles, you will see a lot more social enterprise coming out of the kids. And I think that's definitely a marker of this younger generation, too. I mean, I'm hoping and praying that that we start to all the young people, as they start businesses, start to look at social entrepreneurship as just a normal way of doing business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it's not something you just that a small fraction of people should be doing. We all should be building businesses that have some sort of impact on our community or on the world.
Yeah, in a very positive way. Now, 18 months ago, of course, there's been a lot shifting in the landscape around social media. And so tell me about that role now as you look at some of these greenfield entrepreneuring parts of the world compared to, you know, 20 years ago when we didn't have that engine of the technology of social media.
That's a great question, and you know, I have to mention that part of the reason a lot of these governments are turning over is because the young people who had no access to information before now have social media, and it's the social media that's opened up the entire world to them and opened up all the different different lifestyles that are possible. And they said, wait a minute, this is crazy that we don't have access to things like other people do. We want that. And that's a lot of what's driven these, you know, these revolutions in the Middle East. And now it's called the Arab Spring because it's a new awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been fascinating. I think technology has impacted in such a profound way. Specifically, Facebook has changed everything. I'm talking to people now on a daily basis, and I met in North Africa last week on Facebook as easily as I talk to my next door neighbor. It is seamless for mm-hmm. me to communicate with them. And if you think about in the past, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, what it would have been like to have to call Morocco, you know, it would be such a big deal and it would cost a fortune. Now it costs nothing and you're online. Also Skype. You know, I saw people and we said, we have to stay in touch. We have to make sure we can do this, you know, because when you travel 10,000 miles away,
sure, exactly.
There's that fear that you're going to lose touch. But in 2 seconds, you can be on Skype. I think I put $20 on Skype when I was in Dublin like 5 years ago, and I haven't had to refuel it yet. So I get on Skype, and I'm face to face with, you know, the guy, you know, Gonzalo in Peru. I'm face to face with the kids in Morocco, in Tunisia, with the university presidents and the people I want to be doing business with. So that's just changed everything. And also the smartphones as well. Smartphones are starting to come into these markets. Everyone has cell phones, basically. But the smartphones are getting there. Peru, I didn't see very many. I saw very old phones. And they were trying to take, you know, camera shots and everything with these cameras that you thought, oh, my God, how are they ever going to upload that?
It didn't matter, but it was a start in the right direction.
They wanted the photos. So that was great. But smartphones are starting to get in there. Almost everyone has access to computers, which is crazy, and that means everyone can get online. Wi-Fi is almost everywhere now.
And in some regards, that really jumped over into the older, outdated technologies, so you don't have any adoption concerns because you went from greenfield to something.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, you don't, you know, this generation, they're hopping right onto the new technology. They're not picking up the old traditional phones. They're not installing landlines. You know, especially in these emerging markets, they're not running the phone wires and cables that they used to. It's all digital at this point. So the infrastructure that's being built in these emerging markets is sometimes, you know, way more advanced than we would expect. So all of these things are making a huge difference. And I've got to say that, you know, I had a debate with someone the other night about, you know, how bad certain parts of the world were and their policies. And I said, listen, we've got to separate what's a government that is not effective or a government that's not good with the people. Because oftentimes, most often, the people are great people. I don't care where you're talking about in the world. The people are great. They want the same things that we do. You know, they want to build great relations. They want to travel. They want to experience life to its fullest. So I think, you know, technology and social media is opening up that world for billions of people around the world.
And I bet you would also say, and you've said this before, that as you've traveled the world to work with young people in particular, that you know, close your eyes and there isn't that much difference from one part of the world to the next. There's actually a lot more that's the same.
No, you know, all the time people say to me, like, why are you going there? Why would you go to this country? I don't understand. And I go, and I'm so amazingly surprised at how wonderful these people are and how sophisticated they are and how, you know, you go to El Salvador to their top business school, you would never be able to tell the difference between the kids in El Salvador and the kids at USC in California. When I was in Tunisia, you know, they're beautifully dressed. They have amazing PowerPoint presentations. They're extremely articulate. I don't understand everything in French. But I mean, this global workforce is
that it is global.
The international ones, they are global. They're intelligent. They're hungry. They're sometimes a lot more hungry than even our kids in the U.S.
In fact, that was going to be my next question for you. So what are the messages back to the young Americans that you're working with vis-a-vis the learning that you continue to do with tapping into the international talent?
I love that you asked that question because I think it's so important for every young person in this country and also their parents and their educators and their employers to know this. We are so myopic in the United States. It's amazing how little we pay attention to the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is developing at such a fast pace. Not only are they growing and becoming incredibly competitive to us in so many different ways, but there are also 1 billion young people entering the workforce. And if we're worried about competition in our next door, towns and cities, we should be looking at the global picture too, but also because there's opportunity everywhere. If you can't find opportunity right down the street, it's somewhere else in the world, I promise you. And I have a mission to try to figure out how to build some sort of system so people can seamlessly see this. But we have to start to engage in the global workforce. And our kids right now are getting very focused on what's happening in their own environment. I think a lot of them are becoming very entitled. By giving them everything that they possibly need to get to be quote unquote successful, we're putting them at a disadvantage. And I think it's critical that we start getting our kids to travel, that we send them to different countries, we get them, you know, different, whether it's for a learning experience, whether it's for a semester abroad, a semester at sea, it's critical they start engaging with different cultures. The more similar your kids' friends are, the less opportunity and awareness they're going to have about the rest of the world. And I got to tell you, I see these kids in Africa from these little villages who wind up going to engineering school, who are brilliant beyond words. And when you're looking at global companies that are looking to hire very intelligent people that they can move around the world and give incredible experiences to, they're going to go for the young, hungry, intelligent ones who have been studying like crazy, and really, you know, are dying to get out there and show the world what they can do.
Well, and the other piece of it is part of their just nature, their education has been to reach out beyond their own borders and capture the best that they can. And so that's the other difference, is having it brought to us is something totally different than reaching out towards. It's just like you and I have always encouraged people on the show when it comes to expanding your careers to say, you know, don't go to that conference just in your hometown. Go fly across the United States. I mean, there's enough diversity in this country. You don't necessarily have to do it via a passport and an international flight.
Of course, of course. Just get out of your own town. If you haven't left your city or your state in months or years or ever, you have to get out and experience the world. We have tons of different cultures just in the United States. But, you know, for people who have, you know, kind of bigger eyes or a bigger appetite, I think it's critical that we start to get them to travel. And at very least, turn on BBC when you're at home instead of, you know, whatever else you're watching. Or watch CNBC late at night and watch, like, all the young entrepreneurs on the India program. There's a whole show called Young Turks, and it talks about all the different high growth businesses in India, and they're all in their like 20s and 30s. It's fascinating.
That's exactly right. Different perspective. Back to one of your earlier comments, and one of your eye openers was, you know, to observe those young people in these countries that are Muslim from a secular standpoint and the differences with our those you've seen and elsewhere. I think another part of that message would be as well our own tolerance, not just tolerance and acceptance of, but embracing of and appreciation and respect for the other basis by which these young people have been raised as well. This isn't about changing them to be like us, right? It's also what we can be mindful of and open our minds to.
Of course. And, you know, I think when we talk about different religions, I think we really have to challenge ourselves to understand what we're talking about. There are extremist factions in every religion. There are always people who take it to such an extreme level and do damage. This is not the regular Muslim world. The Muslim people are wonderful, wonderful people. And yes, there are a lot of laws that I don't agree with either. I mean, the concept of Sharia law, you know, where women are completely covered from head to toe in black. I mean, it's really disturbing to see that. But I'm not gonna pretend. I don't know. I think we have to try to come at it from a position of understanding.
Exactly.
And
and respect. Well, Jen Cashel, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on your show again. Your Success Network or YSN.com. Wish you all the best. Travel, be well, and take some downtime here as well, my friend.
Thank you, Sarah.
You bet. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays 10 to noon right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.